Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. On this pre-recorded program, via remote from Washington, here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 28, 2020. Two traders are killed in Warab State.
It was yesterday around noon time when we received the information that some traders were traveling from Tonch East through Tonch North County to Wau Town. But before reaching Wau, they were ambushed in a place called Ajang.
And South Sudanese officials fight fake academic certificates.
If we catch a certificate which is for, we will automatically just sue such a person to court.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Warab State say an identified gunman killed two cattle traders in Tonch East County on Tuesday. Police commissioner in charge of Tonch East, Tonch North and Tonch South counties confirmed the incident. He says the attackers also stole more than 50 head of cattle. For VOA News, Daniel Maring Wek reports from Tonch.
Major General Nyal Munchol, the police commissioner in charge of the area, says dozens of cattle traders were moving their cattle from Tonch East to a cattle market in Wau when the unknown gunmen ambushed the group in an area between Marialo and Walbert Payams in Tonch North County.
It was yesterday around noon time when we received the information that some traders were traveling from Tonch East through Tonch North County to Wau Town. But before reaching Wau, they were ambushed in a place called Ajang, and two of these traders were killed, and one person was injured, and he was taken to Marialo local hospital.
Nial, who condemned the attack, says a man has stolen more than 50 head of cattle. He says the traders is scattered into nearby butchers. Angelo Dudmangong is the executive director of the now defunct Marialo County, where the incident took place. He identified the two deceased traders as Manuel Kao and another man identified only as Sigin, both from Urul East County of Lakes State. Mangong says area youth tried pursuing the attackers but were not successful. Mangong says he is working with other local authorities to identify the gunmen and bring them to justice.
When we heard the information of two traders killed and one person injured, I immediately talked to my counterpart from Nyabagok Payam under Tonch East County, and we are up to now in coordination with them to try to identify the culprits.
Mangong is urging communities in Tonch East and Tonch North to remain calm. Moses Madon Dudeng, head of the Tonch East County Security Committee, says early last week, armed youth blocked the road between Tonch South and Tonch East counties with the intent of preventing traders from reaching Romage Market. Deng says, following recent violence between Luanjang, Thik and Ako communities due to ravine attacks, armed youth in the area have resorted to looting travelers and beating women and children who use the road. Deng, who is the former speaker of the Warab State Assembly, says local leaders do not have the resources to stop intercommunal violence in the area. He is urging youth to denounce violence.
There is no strong police. The youth are the ones that have taken the law into their own hands. They are the ones controlling everything. So they can do everything. They have blocked the roads and preventing the young citizens not to move across their area. So this business is happening. So we are coming to tell them that you are destroying your area. You will stop fighting.
Both Nyal, Dut and Madot says four roads combined with a shortage of local law enforcement has led to a rise in a criminal activity in the area. The three leaders says they intend to make a formal appeal to the national government to deploy security posts along the borders of communities in the area so people can travel safely from one place to another. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
A senior official at the Ministry of Public Service warns that any job applicant who presents fake academic documents risks going to prison. 2 weeks ago, a court in Juba sentenced 3 men to 4 years in prison for forging South Sudan's school certificates and other documents. Undersecretary in the Ministry of Public Service and Human Resources says a committee is checking the authenticity of all academic certificates from institutions of higher learning presented by job seekers. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juma Yuanekebi, the undersecretary in the Public Service Ministry, says his ministry will prosecute anyone found holding fake academic certificates. Kebi says forging academic certificates along with other legal documents is a crime in South Sudan.
If we catch a certificate which is forged, we will automatically just sue such a person to court. Okay. Fake decrees. That we came across, automatically we just send the owner back, because normally appointments are initiated by the institutions, not we. They get the certificate and send them to us down here. We scrutinize. Once we have found that this decree is not the original one, automatically we send the certificate back to the institution that sent it to us, and we tell them this person is either to resign because he has not yet been employed, or we open a legal case against such a person.
KB encourages South Sudan students who complete their studies abroad or from East African countries to get their certificates authenticated by university officials and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Late last week, a Juba court sentenced 3 men, Khalid Babala, Lado Lawrence, and Kenyi Mark, to 4 years in prison for forging South Sudan school certificates and other important documents. According to the 2008 Penal Code Act, whoever imitates or alters any key information or fabricates any instrument intending that such false instrument shall be used for a criminal purpose, upon conviction, the individual will be sentenced to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 3 years and may also be subjected to fines. In last week's case, presiding judge Deng G. Ajak said based on the level of severity of the crime committed, the court decided to reduce the person's sentence from 7 to 4 years.
The court has decided punishment which is equivalent to the crime that has been committed by the three who have been sentenced to 4 years imprisonment, starting from 22nd October 2020.
Simon Ngok Deng, Secretary General of the South Sudan Examination Council, welcomed the verdict, saying South Sudanese academic qualification must be respected. Deng says he believes some current government employees hold fake bachelor's and master's degrees.
We have to make it very clear, the law is taking full effect, and no one will be left unpunished for those who involve themselves in forgery of certificate. South Sudan is a nation that has a place in the world, and our qualification must be respected.
Deng says too many times many people in South Sudan have forged certificates or other documents, but in the end, he says, they will pay.
There have been a lot of foul play all along. We have arrested people, they have been let go. We have arrested people time and again, they have been let go. But this time around, and I'm very happy with the work of my teams and with the work of security in our country, that they did not let them go this time around.
A new system is now in place which verifies all certificates coming to South Sudan from foreign countries, according to Deng.
We have informed all people in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and foreign embassies that every certificate that comes in the name of South Sudan must be re-verified. You must send it back to us, and what happened in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They send it back to us, and with the help of ambassadors here, and the rest in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and our security teams, the police, they have been very cooperative.
Deng says the 3 young men sentenced last week should send a clear message to others in South Sudan to think twice before they try to pass off forged school certificates or other documents as the real thing. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where Sudanese Muslims and Christian leaders who attended a two-day conference in Khartoum agreed to work together to promote religious freedom in Sudan. The religious leaders say religion is a human right, adding that the transitional government of national unity should allow more religious freedom in accordance with the country's laws. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
As a two-day conference organized by religious organization Unity International wrapped up in Khartoum yesterday, Sudanese Muslim and Christian leaders signed a declaration to promote peace and freedom of worship among Sudanese communities. They also agreed to encourage community dialogue that promotes peace among people of different faiths in Sudan. Michael Didi, the Catholic Archbishop of Khartoum, says the declaration's resolutions will help in creating space for more religious freedom in Sudan as the country embarks on a new era following the revolution that included the ouster of Islamist President Omar al-Bashir. Didi says religious groups agreed to work together to strengthen the unity of the Sudanese people. He says 3 decades of religious oppression created social stigma among different communities across the country, but says change will not come easily.
We are still to get a kind of healing, yes, because for a long time there was this kind of discrimination. But then also I don't think it will be just one night and we are off, on. I think we are moving well. We are moving well. But we will take time. We will take some time. Okay. Because many things we have planned it for a long time and so on, to approve them and make things new. And the understanding and the change of heart, the change of thinking.
Jibril Bilal, a member of the Darfur-based rebel group Justice and Equality Movement, or JEM, says the resolutions are in line with the provisions of the recent Juba peace deal, which calls for a secular system of governance in Sudan. Bilal says the state of Sudan should be established on equal rights.
The states and the government and the official bodies, they have to stand in the same level of the people of Sudan. The state and the government, they have to look after the interest of the Sudanese, regardless of their religious, of their ethnic or colors or all this stuff.
William Dalvin, co-chair of Khartoum-based organization Unity International, says the declaration paves the way for a bright future for religious freedom in Sudan after decades of repression and oppression of Christians in the country. He called on Sudanese Muslims and Christians to forget the past and build a new Sudan where citizens are treated equally. Dalvin praised the transitional government under the leadership of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok for what he termed the great achievement on reforming laws that oppress religious freedoms.
I think that God providentially had us here at this time after the repeal of the apostasy laws, the banning and criminalization of female genital mutilation, after the peace agreement between SPLA and the discussion of having a secular state, the separation of mosque and state, of church and state.
Sudan abolished the Islamic apostasy law, Public Order Act, and criminalize female genital mutilation. Raja Nicola Abdul Masih, a member of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, says the government is committed to reforming all oppressive laws and promoting social justice. Nicola says Sudan can be a shining example to the world where multicultural groups peacefully coexist.
Sudan is known for multi-ethnic, multilingual, multi-religious and multi-economic social and political activities. Therefore, its culture is a mixture of African and Arab features. They deal according to an interconnected social system through which it is easy to find suitable ground for the harmony of this hybrid of all their differences.
For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Tanzanians go to the polls amid social media blackout. That story is coming up after this break.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite meal?
I like chips and anything braai, whether chicken or beef.
My favorite meal is our fish, mainly jambo, and local vegetables like nkwani.
I love chapati. Like, I don't know why I love chapati, but I just love chapati. There's no reason for loving it. Like, chapati every day.
My favorite meal is jollof and rice with chicken. That will be best for me.
My favorite food, matoke, that is banana and beans. Banana and beans, yes.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Millions of Tanzanians are voting Wednesday in elections that will decide if President John Magufuli, known as the bulldozer for targeting corruption and critics, will get another five-year term in office. But ahead of the polls, opposition politicians say authorities have targeted them with violence and intimidation, while some social media has been cut off. For VOA News, Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Tanzanians cast their ballots Wednesday in elections to decide if President John Magufuli gets another 5 years in office, despite his government cracking down on critics and the press. Magufuli, who leads the ruling CCM party, is running against 15 challengers. His main one, the Chadema party's Tundu Lissu, returned in July to Tanzania from 3 years of self-imposed exile after surviving an attack where he was shot 16 times. Magufuli has a reputation for cracking down on corruption and pushing large infrastructure projects, but also for squeezing critics and the media. Dar es Salaam residents line up to cast their ballots Wednesday and decline to tell a reporter who they voted for. Kiosk owner Rovita Mitambwe said she was keen to take part in the vote.
Mimi ni raia wa Tanzania na kilicho nisukuma kuja kupiga kura.
She says what motivates her to vote is to choose a president with leadership who will do justice for both her and all Tanzanians. Even before voting began, however, opposition parties accused the authorities of targeting them with violence. The ACT Wazalendo party said Tuesday that security forces have fatally shot 9 people since Monday, some while protesting against election fraud in the Zanzibar archipelago. Tanzanian police said there were no reports of anyone being killed. The opposition Chadema party chairperson Freeman Mbowe tweeted early Wednesday that armed men had raided his hotel and taken 2 of his security guards. Chadema's Lissu said the party's polling agents were blocked from stations and staffed ballot boxes were seized. Dar es Salaam voter Jackson Balongo told a reporter he witnessed one polling station mixing up voter names.
Ukifungua WhatsApp haifanyi kazi, ukifungua YouTube haifanyi kazi.
He says voters knew they were going to vote at a certain station and then they found their name wasn't on the list. They found their names at another station. This was a problem, says Balongo, that made some people go home without voting. Telephone data and internet disruptions also were reported ahead of the polls, including to social media applications, WhatsApp and Twitter. Tanzanian authorities dismissed the disruptions, saying they were not connected to the election. Official results are expected by the end of the week. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
A judicial panel investigating claims of police brutality and shooting of protesters began hearing complaints in Lagos on Tuesday. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
Nigerian officials began hearing claims of police brutality on Tuesday, a core demand of weeks of protests that have seized the country. According to authorities, at least 13 states have established judicial panels to hear complaints. Independent investigations were a central push of protesters who successfully demanded the end of a widely feared police branch called the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, or SARS. The judicial panel first heard claims from several years ago of police violence. In Nigeria's largest city, Lagos, Okeolagu Abudiki, a father of five, sought justice for what he said was a 47-day detention in 2012 at the hands of SARS officers after his boss accused him of theft. He said he bled profusely and lost two teeth as officers beat and tortured him.
The torture was just too much. They suspended me, they tore my clothes, used my singlet, hung on my neck, put up a bucket of cement that bended me like this. A lot of things anyway. I still have some scars all over.
After roughly 30 minutes of testimony and questions, the eight-member panel said it would rule on Abudiki's case within 7 to 10 days. The demonstrations turned violent on October 20th when witnesses said the military opened fire on peaceful protesters. But the army said it wasn't there. The Lagos panel has yet to receive complaints from the recent shooting incident, but the Chair Justice said it would fully investigate it, though declined to say when. The panel will sit for 6 months. Meanwhile, tensions remain high across Nigeria, with sporadic shooting in parts of Lagos and looting nationwide.
On COVID, professionals are warning that once vaccines are produced and are ready for use, it may not mean it's time to end the preventive measures put in place during the pandemic. International Edition's Steve Miller spoke to VOA science correspondent Steve Baragona to learn why.
The expectation has been that, okay, you know, the vaccine is coming, and once the vaccine comes, then we can get back to normal. And I think what a lot of the folks that I talked to were saying was that, well, I mean, eventually we hope so, but We can't say that at this point. There's a lot of questions about the vaccine that we just don't know right now. I mean, the big one and the most obvious one is we just don't know how well it's going to work. You know, like a lot of childhood vaccines are great. Measles, mumps, rubella, you know, those kinds of things, you get it once and you're done. You are protected for life. And they're like, you know, 90 some odd percent effective. We don't know with this vaccine how effective it's going to be and how long it's going to last. The FDA has set 50% effective as kind of their benchmark. They want to see clinical trials that show this vaccine prevents infection or reduces severity of infection in at least half of the people who get it. That means the other half, you know, can get the vaccine and still get sick.
Does that mean that if you do have the vaccine and you yourself are protected against, I guess, the mal effects of it, but could you, you know, be a carrier and infect other people? Do they know that?
No, they don't. And that's a big concern with this vaccine, too, that the kind of what I saw one paper described as a worst case scenario would be a vaccine that, you know, primes your immune system to fight off the virus, and it fights it off as well enough so that you don't get sick, but you'd still be infected and you'd still be carrying the virus. And that means that you can pass the virus on to others. And this is why they're really stressing that you'll still need to wear a mask. We'll still need to social distance until we've really got this thing under control. And we don't really know how long that's going to be. I mean, it's not a happy message. It's not necessarily something that people are going to want to hear. People are already tired of the COVID precautions, and they're not going to be thrilled about hearing that, okay, I got vaccinated, but I still can't take off my mask, and I still can't, you know, go to a movie theater, you know, safely. But, you know, unfortunately, the virus doesn't necessarily care how tired of it you are. It's still out there.
The Northern Hemisphere is entering the flu season, and healthcare professionals are really stressing that it's really important to get the flu vaccine. But a lot of people are resistant to doing that. Are they worried at all that once a COVID-19 vaccine is available and ready to be distributed, that there may be some hesitancy among the world's population of using it?
Yeah, there's a lot of concern about that, too, that in the U.S., we've seen people's willingness to get a vaccine right away has gone down over the past few months. I mean, as the vaccine has gotten closer, fewer people are saying that they will run out and get it as soon as it's available. And that could potentially be bad news in the big picture, because what we're really trying to do with this vaccine is produce enough immunity, have enough people immune to the virus that, you know, the virus has a hard time finding somebody to infect. This is something called herd immunity. And you need a certain percentage of people to be immune in order for that to happen. I mean, we don't know. One of the many things we don't know about this virus is at what level we reach herd immunity. It might be 70 or 80% of people have to be vaccinated or have gotten the virus themselves. It might be as low as 40 or 50. We don't know. But right now, we've got maybe half of the population saying that they're not going to get the vaccine when it comes out, which means that if it takes half the population to reach herd immunity, we're not going to get there. If it takes 70 or 80% of the population, we're a long ways off.
That's Steve Baragona, VOA science correspondent. He was speaking to International Edition's Steve Miller.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Before we end this show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 p.m. local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your relatives and friends. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Single Ladies by Beyoncé. Listening to Beyoncé with her song Single Ladies. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
If you don't, you'll be alone. And like a ghost, I'll be gone.